In today's episode, Crew Dragon gets ready for liftoff, the Model 3 starts to lease, and there's solar panels in space. Let's get ludicrous. Hey there, and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about the future stuff. It's all cool stuff that's going to be really cool future things in tomorrow's future world. I'm Joe Scott from the Answers with Joe YouTube channel. With me is Tim Dodd.
Hey, it's me, Tim Dodd, the everyday astronaut, the guy with some rockets inside of my house. And with me is Ben Solens.
What's up, guys? It's Ben Solens from Teslanomics. And I have a third of a broken Tesla surfboard in my house. So take that, Tim.
I like that you sleep in a WeWork.
Ooh, yeah. You know, it's expensive here. So I just figured California, like, save some money, you know, you... Sleep in the car, sleep here, whatever, it's all good.
Sleep under the desk.
Surf in the corner.
Yeah, yeah, we can do this.
Oh, well, guys, I'm going to hop right to it because I am excited to tell you guys what I'm getting ready for here. I'm not going to be here next week, so we really got to soak in as much, you know, me time as possible, right? I mean, got to make up for it.
Drink in the Tim, everyone.
Because in 1 week from today, I will be driving my butt down to Cape Canaveral, to Kennedy Space Center, to see SpaceX launch their first Crew Dragon capsule.
Woo!
This is big. Like, this has been years and years and years in the making. I mean, this thing was originally slated... I mean, they were talking about launching this for sure. Like, 2017 was supposed to be the year that, you know, Crew Dragon was going to fly. They did the Dragon abort in, like, 2015. So they've been working on this for a long time. And finally, that day is actually here. Ish, it's on the charts. So I wanted to just talk to you guys about like what this is and why we're so excited and what you can expect.
This will actually have people on it, or is this a test flight?
This will not have people on it. This is the first test flight, though, of the type of crew capsule, the Dragon 2 or Crew Dragon, that that will have people on it.
And is it going to have a fake kind of Starman in there?
I heard somewhere, like on a webcast once, they mentioned Star Gal even. Oh. So there might be two dummies, two mannequins, a Starman and a Star Gal, which I think would be really cool.
It's going to have some cargo on it, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it'll have about 400-ish kilograms of 400 pounds, so like 190 kilograms or so of additional crew, because it is going to the International Space Station, so they might as well make some use out of it, right? You know, it'll take 27 hours to get there, which is kind of slow. That must be what they're planning to do to get crew there, because I think they're probably going to take most likely the same approach. But so this is just to clarify here too quick, because I've been kind of just realized this recently. Dragon 2 is basically like the new version of Dragon. But it can be crew or it can be cargo. So it's easier just to say Crew Dragon when you're referring to when it has people on it or when it's, you know, has life support systems and things that the cargo version doesn't. When it's just cargo only, it will probably just start hearing it called cargo or crew 2 or sorry, Dragon 2, which which I think they're going to start using that once they start refurbishing the Crew Dragons. They'll strip out some of the redundant systems, some of the like life support systems, and they'll make it ready for cargo. So that's a whole nother thing they got to work on too. So,
and you'll be live streaming the entire 27 hours.
By the end of it, I'm just like, people are just watching me sleep.
Right.
Well, actually, did you guys see that a guy like had his most successful Twitch stream ever? He had hundreds of people. He like fell asleep by accident on Twitch, woke up to like watching. Hundreds of people watching him sleeping
for hours. That's creepy.
I think that's hilarious.
So when is the official date? You said we have a date.
Yes, March 2nd, but it's really early in the morning. It's 2:48 a.m. So that'll be like basically Friday night for most of us in the U.S. Really, actually, most people around the world that'll be considered like Friday night or Friday morning. Friday night in the U.S., for most people around the world, will be like Saturday morning, you know, like...
So you just go from the bar straight to the launch, right? That's just kind of... Bar closes, there you go.
I'm going to be live streaming about 2 hours ahead of time, because since I will be on site, I'll be at the press site, I'll be 3 miles away. I even have a dedicated landline this time, Cat 5, so I won't have poopy. I found a company that actually services out to the press site, so that's awesome. So I will have a dedicated line with great coverage. I'm really excited. I'll have way better, you know, like audio and visual than last time. I'm really excited. It's going to be awesome. I'll be setting up some remote pad cameras, doing a little bit of behind the scenes stuff, and yeah, covering the whole thing. I'm taking a friend Michael down with me. We're going to do some additional shooting, like on the pad and things like that, because we'll be going out to the launch pad. Yeah, so this is awesome. This is finally, like, I've been waiting for this one for so freaking long, I can't even tell you. You know, it's riding on top of a Falcon 9, a Block 5, a fresh one. It hasn't been reflown. This is a big year for SpaceX. It's a really big year for Boeing and ULA, too. This is just a big year for NASA. I mean, these, again, are NASA missions. NASA hired both of these companies to send crew up to the International Space Station. So this is basically replacing the space shuttle, and these two vehicles are, at least the crew aspect of it. So it's a big, big deal, and NASA should be really proud to finally get these vehicles pretty much up and going here. So I'm hoping for there's a flight readiness review tomorrow, Friday. We'll hear about it at about 6 p.m. Eastern, and hopefully after that, I'll basically be getting ready, packing up, and getting ready to head down. And
nice.
Woo! Yeah.
And so how long until a crewed Dragon will go up, assuming this one's successful and all that?
Yeah, assuming this one's successful, which we all assume it will at this point, because this one they're taking extra good care of. If this fails, we're in trouble. they will take this the crewed Dragon capsule. It will splash down in the water, and it's actually going to splash down in the Atlantic Ocean, which is normally the cargo capsules always splash down in the Pacific Ocean. So these will actually be splashing down in the Atlantic. They'll retrieve it. They'll refurbish it. And then they're going to use that same Dragon capsule for their abort test, their in-flight abort test. And that will probably be, I honestly have no idea, 2 to 3 months later. They're going to use a pretty stripped-down Falcon 9. It sounds like it is actually a full Falcon 9 from what I've been hearing. It also sounds like potentially like the boss man himself really wants them to try to recover the booster, even though it was supposed to be an expendable booster. So even though there's going to be
the Dragon on the uncrewed Dragon or the test one
on the,
later
on the in-flight abort test. Sorry.
On the in-flight abort test. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. It sounds like they're going to potentially try to recover it, which who knows, because you're pulling the aerodynamic nose cone off at the point of the highest amount of pressure on the vehicle. So max Q, that's when they're lighting those abort motors. That's when this thing shoots off, leaving the rest of the vehicle exposed to really intense pressures.
Oh, yeah.
Way more intense. Like, Blue Origin did this, and they knocked it out of the park. Their two vehicles just spread apart like no big deal. The booster landed, the capsule landed, no big deal. SpaceX, their Max-Q is probably going to be a lot higher dynamic pressure than what Blue Origin experiences, since these are orbital vehicles. So it'll be really intense. That one's going to be nuts. So I'm guessing about 3 months after that, once that happens, that's the last like certification thing, basically, for the Crew Dragon. Then they can put people on it. So it's still looking like potentially by, you know, July, August. I mean, that seems realistic at this point.
So 2019, though.
2019. I mean, it sounds like everyone's really, really getting antsy.
Nice.
Not antsy because they're still taking a lot of precaution, obviously. But it really does sound like they're focusing in on getting crew up to the station from the U.S. soil this year. I mean, if it doesn't happen this year, I'll be quite shocked, because we're finally seeing all the things that need to be in place. The tower's ready. The vehicles are ready. I mean,
did they put the neon lights in the tower yet? I think we need that, definitely.
Have you seen the tower?
I've not seen the inside. Did they show?
With the walkway?
Yeah.
You guys talk amongst yourselves while I pull this up, because I'm going to be over here half pooping my pants for a minute. I mean, it is. I think we talked about this a minute.
Just a half poop.
I want to find. There's one with a sunset that was so pretty that you guys just have to see it. I think we maybe had it on the other week, but maybe we didn't. Here, I'm pulling this up. This is, if you're listening on the podcast, go to SpaceX's Twitter. Look at how pretty that is.
Yeah.
I mean, half of it's the fact that it's a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous sunset. But, I mean, their walkway looks like it's from the future, finally. You know,
so
it's not some...
Is this a rendering, or is this an actual
photo? That's real. That's a photograph.
So DM1 is already vertical?
They,
or is this an old one?
No, they put it up earlier this year already. They put it up vertical, did a fit test and everything, made sure everything is good to go.
Got it. So that's not current, but that was...
The real vehicle. That is the real rocket. That is all of the hardware. They just did a fit and finish.
It's not like currently sitting there in that position is what I'm saying.
Right. Here, let me also pull this up. I hope you guys can't hear all that noise because it's very loud on my end. But look at the tower here. So if you're not looking at this, SpaceX has done so much work. This tower used to support the space shuttle, right? This is Launch Complex 39A, which is the same launch pad that had all the Apollo moon missions all took off from 39A. Yeah. But most of the space shuttle, a good portion, the majority of the space shuttle launches also took off from 39A here. And they had a big, meaty tower here. And notice, you probably can't see my cursor, but there's that kind of pole off to the, like, that weird pole lattice thing off to the left of the tower between the rocket and the tower that you can see. That is structural. That's part of the fixed service structure here. The whole tower is considered the FSS, fixed service structure. There used to be a big rotating clean room, basically, because when the space shuttle was out on the pad, lots of times they wouldn't have the payload in it. They would integrate the payload into its dedicated clean room on this thing called the rotating service structure that would swing over, cover up the space shuttle, so the space shuttle, when it was sitting on the pad, could almost have its own, like, garage, where they could also, work on the payload and get it integrated into the vehicle, check on it, do all these other last-minute loading things. And SpaceX totally removed that whole rotating service structure. If you look at pictures from, a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it's just slowly been chipped away. If you watch launches, you can tell about how, when it is in time based on how much of the rotating service module has been chipped away at, because they've been working on it for years now. But now they also have all this beautiful black cladding covering the tower. All this, they painted it up black instead of this kind of fading gray. They're making it look really, really good. I mean, it looks like nothing we've ever seen before.
Like a modern spaceship or something.
Like a modern space complex, man.
I think they need to put Boring Company bricks around it to make it like a medieval tower, and then it'd be the perfect design.
Some weird throwback to the medieval times for a space launch vehicle.
Medieval rockets, whatever. It's like steampunk, you know? Elon's into that.
He is. That wouldn't surprise me. But basically,
it would just become a trebuchet.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. They just fling stuff up into space. That's a whole different topic. But yeah, I don't get, guys, when I see how clean and cool this looks, why haven't other companies taken that extra little bit into aesthetics? Sorry, I say aesthetics sometimes. Aesthetics.
Why don't they just?
Really, though, because if you're designing something, the ability to make it functional and look good, there's a crossover where it can be both, and it doesn't really require that much more work. Right. You know, it's just like, oh, we'll just add these things here. Like, okay, you know what I mean? It's why? Why doesn't everyone take this pride? I feel like the other company that does is Rocket Lab.
You know, and I would say that I think that sentiment permeates all of Elon's businesses. I took my bumper off again on my Tesla Model 3 yesterday at a shop that does a lot of these kind of EV customizations, and they all were commenting like even the inside of the bumper is like perfectly designed, and like just to an engineer is like a beautiful thing.
Yeah,
you know, I'm looking at it going, I don't know what's going on here, but you know, to them, yeah. So that definitely is part of their ethos or whatever.
Even when I tour, I was at SpaceX at the end of, or August or September or something last year, when they kind of did an event showing off Crew Dragon and stuff like that. They had their design boards up of Crew Dragon, the spacesuits, you know, literally, I mean, we're talking about architectural masterpieces.
Yeah.
And they just have them up on display. It is beautiful. It's an art board, and it just makes you realize, they're doing something different here. They're taking the art of engineering and really putting it into practice. And I just think that is very, very inspiring. And I think it's definitely raising the bar big time. Big time.
Yeah, aesthetics matter.
Well, I wonder if, in the days of the space race, when NASA was the only game in town, in the United States anyway, you know. Well, first of all, it was very utilitarian, and it was very just engineer focused and form follows function kind of thing. But now that it's more privately run, now that it's something that you know, there's competition there. I wonder if that whole design aesthetic matters, you know, not just from a branding standpoint and separating themselves just by people looking at it and saying, that's a SpaceX rocket. I can tell just because it's got this flare on it or whatever. But also just in capturing the public's imagination and investor interest, and it's, you know, design actually matters where it maybe didn't so much before.
It's such a backwards thing to me, almost. Like, you'd almost think it doesn't matter at all when you're talking about, like, even, like, congressional support and things like that. But when, like, it's such public news, and when all, like, when so many of my fans are like, I want to work for SpaceX someday. They don't say I want to work in the aerospace industry. This is why there's such a fanboyism about SpaceX, is because they've inspired by doing things that are different, by doing things that were considered impossible, by doing things that look and are cool. Like, they're taking the extra little bit to make it look as cool as it is. You know what I mean? And I think that stuff matters, because now you have an inspired and talented workforce. You have a public that's interested in what you're doing. And when you're talking about congressional funds going into a space program, like, that stuff does matter. I mean, right now, if you say the word SLS on Twitter, it's going to be followed by an insane SLS is the Space Launch System, by the way, like NASA's rocket they're building. You'll just get, like, torn apart of, like, what a stupid old dump. You know, like, and it's because it's not cool, unfortunately. Like, it's slow to be developed, and it's just not cool.
I think what you're touching on is something I've said for a long time, is, like, at the end of the day, you're dealing with humans, and we've evolved with a certain set of kind of psychological triggers. And, you know, our attention or our appreciation for aesthetically pleasing things is one of those. And it's kind of inescapable, really, you know. And so I think that's kind of what you're touching on. So even if you can say from an engineering standpoint this doesn't add value, if you look at the totality of a program and its likelihood of success, and that being needing people to support it, then you have to play to the psychology of people. Whether that's the public that see it and go, holy cow, that actually looks like a spaceship, that actually looks where astronauts should be walking down to get on there, you have to consider those things, right? So maybe the hardcore purist engineer goes, ah, who cares? But every person that's just an observer has an appreciation for that, simply because that's our human nature, I think. You know, it goes in so many ways that pops up where you're like, why was this one better than this one? It's like, well, because they understood that it wasn't just the spec sheet that you came up with. It was the whole totality of the program.
Right. Yeah.
And of course, depending on where you are mentally, that's going to play either – it's either going to support how you already feel – Either no matter how you feel, it's going to support how you already feel. Where I'm going with that, I can talk, is like the people who are just absolute Elon haters would look at those same design elements, would look at like the Starhopper and the Starship and the stainless steel or whatever, and just be like, oh, it's all just a big show, and you know, they're just you know, pulling the wool over our eyes with fancy designs or whatever.
Yep.
Like, one of the biggest arguments I ever had in my life was well, that's probably an exaggeration, but I had a big argument with a friend who is an Elon hater. And when Falcon Heavy went up with the Starman and the Roadster and everything, and he was just sickened by the showmanship of it all. And I was like, look, they had to put some kind of dummy payload up there just to test out this vehicle. And they decided, why not put on a show? Why not give people something interesting to see? And so they put this thing up and they had it spin around just right. I mean, you could tell they planned all this out, you know, to get it just to the right elevation or whatever, and then have it like spin to just the right speed so that the world would like rotate behind it. Yeah. And it was amazing to see. And it stirred a lot of fascination and awe in people. Like, we never seen that before. It was that out of context thing. You never seen a car in space before.
Yeah,
it's a very simple thing, but psychologically it's just like, what the hell am I looking at? You know,
it's inspiring,
and it's inspiring, and that matters, you know.
Yeah,
and it's inspiring because of all those things, you know, because of the human nature of like what we appreciate naturally. It's not that Yeah, you know, they didn't have a great ad campaign for that, right?
Right.
They just
that was the ad campaign.
Yeah, that was it.
Well, but that's my point. Like, it was designed with this idea to
publicity in mind,
like inspire people, right? Yeah. So mm-hmm. I think that there's kind of three main things. There's, you know, aspiration, inspiration, and education. So, like, I think a lot of times when you create something or do something like that, you know, you should pay attention to those things because of the impact. Yeah. Now everybody in the world knows about SpaceX and these rockets, you know. I mean, maybe a lot of people did before, but there are clearly many people that had never even heard or had any clue about this stuff.
I can't tell you how many people I've heard, like, especially like some of my like people in Discord and stuff. We talk about this often, that like Falcon Heavy was the first time they had really heard about SpaceX, and that literally changed their life, and now they're pursuing aerospace engineering degrees. Like, there is a handful of people that I could list off a dozen or two that I know that I know of personally that literally changed their life. Falcon Heavy changed their life. That's crazy to actually think about.
Yep. Well, speaking of that, nuts. So you said a couple weeks after DM1 we'd see Falcon Heavy. Still It'll sticking be, to that, or
I do have a little update for you. And okay. I'm glad you mentioned this. I'm hearing the real life turnaround. I said a couple weeks after DM1. I'm hearing, honestly, a more realistic pad turnaround time is about 4 to 5 weeks.
Okay.
So it sounds like, you know, if this does go off at the beginning of March, that mid-April, early to mid-April, it sounds like this is Arabsat is the first Falcon Heavy going up, and it sounds like they've been trying to launch this thing for a very, very long time. It sounds like their customers getting extremely anxious and has a lot of pressure on them. So I think this is one that, as long as everything's checking out, they're going to be in a pretty big hurry to get it going. That's their story this year, is hurry up. I mean, they've got a lot of execution to do, a lot of long-term planning and big ambitions, and this is the year to knock it all out of the park. So the pressure's on.
You know, maybe – well, Joe, what are you doing around that time? Because maybe that would be a good time for all of us to meet up and do something in person, since, Tim, you'll be there. I'm planning on being there.
Yeah.
When was the time again?
Probably early April.
Were you watching Meme Review again? Is that what you were doing?
Yeah, I was.
Let's figure it out.
Like, so, because we had been talking about that off and on here on the podcast, and I didn't know exactly when it was, but once it gets nailed down,
I can do it. Here's a fun thing. This is a really fun thing. If you're listening to this too, by the way, you're definitely invited to this. Ben, especially if it does look like it's getting closer and going to fit around here, April 13th is Yuri's night at Kennedy Space Center.
Okay.
Yep. And Yuri's night is a big space party. This is the second year that they'll have it on the Space Coast at Kennedy Space Center. But it's basically a big party under the space shuttle. It's not always a party under a space shuttle. They actually have these parties. You can host your own Yuri's night party in your hometown. Go to yurisnight.net. It's just a fun, all around the world, people get together to celebrate Yuri Gagarin, the first human to go to space, just to get together and celebrate humanity and humanity's accomplishments. So it's international. It's just a fun, like, bonding experience. People come and nerd out. You know, they'll wear, like, costumes. Some people will get super cosplay on you. Some people will, just hang out. And it's a lot of fun. So that, in Florida this year, is April 13th. At Kennedy Space Center. So if Falcon Heavy happens to be within 1 week of that, holy cow, that'll be like the coolest week ever. That'll be so fun. If Yuri's Night is close to that,
I thought it was usually at the, I forget what it's called, but the Endeavor?
Yep, they have that too.
Oh, okay.
So it's also at, like, LA has one on the 6th, a week before. I'll be at both. I'm doing at both for sure. I don't know if I'm doing anything, but then I want to go and hang out because it's awesome. It's all my people.
Let's hang. So let's
yeah, come up for the 6th for sure.
Yeah, yeah, that's easy.
In the LA, other one, but then
the other one, I'll have my son with me, so it's a bit more difficult to take him for a week or two. But yeah, we'll figure it out. So so I guess for people listening, let's put it out there, like have a meetup or something like that.
Definitely.
For whatever. And then we'll just have to convince Joe to get his butt out to either of the coasts.
if you live within 3 hours of either LA or Kennedy Space Center, you don't have an excuse but to try to get there. 3 or 4 hours. I mean, come on, I'd do that for you guys. And it just really is a lot of fun. So Yuri's Night, yurisnight.net.
Cool.
Definitely get ready for that. It's fun, and I really want this to be a bigger deal than it is. Like, I've seen a lot of growth. I've been going to it for, I've gone to, I have three of them now, and it's been growing kind of each time. So I'm glad to see it's picking up steam. I think just as general excitement's going up, but I want this to be like the biggest party of the year for everyone. It's really cool.
That's a tall ask, but yes.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
It'll turn into like, never mind. Carnival at Rio.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. But a bunch of people dressed up as space.
I started a joke and then just deflated. Oh. Okay. Well, ready to move on from the demo thing, the SpaceX?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's enough SpaceX talk for now. For now.
Well, so I had like, this isn't much of a story, but I thought it was interesting and it would lead into some other stuff that would be interesting to talk about. But no, I ran across a story about some guys who developed a new solar panel technology.
Ooh.
It's a startup called InsoLight, and InsoLight.
Oh, okay.
Good. Not guys that are very light but can't get laid. But they have this new solar panel technology that's supposed to improve the efficiency up to 29%, which would be a record for the retail market.
It will improve by 29, or it will improve to 29?
I think improve to 29. Okay. It's at 25% right now, isn't it?
I thought it was less than that even. And it depends on the types of panels and all kinds of stuff, but yeah.
Sure. Well, what they're doing that I thought was interesting was they're basically taking the same kind of the same kind of solar panel technology that they use in like satellites in space, which I believe are more efficient, but they're more expensive because they are made for space.
Because
flight,
mass
right?
matters, you want the most efficient thing possible.
Exactly. But what they're doing, and it sounds pretty simple, it's like this clearly came from a why don't they just moment. they put like these optical layers on top of this that have these sort of bubbles on it that focus the light it's like a magnifying glass.
Yeah, magnifying glass.
That focuses the light down on a very small solar panel. So it's like you actually don't need as much solar panel structure as a normal photovoltaic. Good Lord, I can't talk today, guys. But anyway, so it says the design means the cells need to take up less than 0.5% of the solar panel surface of traditional solar panels and still get like nearly 30% efficiency. So it says all solar... recently tested by an independent lab, patented optical system concentrates the sunlight on a kind of miniature photovoltaic cell usually used in satellites. So, yeah. It's ultra-thin, works on rooftops, and could be kind of cool.
I think the most promising thing about this is that I would assume the most expensive part of a solar cell is that photovoltaic. You know, that's an expensive thing to produce, and if you don't have to produce nearly as much to produce the same amount of, like, this could actually be a cost savings thing and an overall efficiency bump because it's, you know, you're basically amplifying the light hitting the cell. That seems very easy to manufacture and like an easy ramp up and way to move forward with solar cells. I personally can't off the top of my head think of a reason why, like, oh, this sounds totally implausible. Sure, it works in a lab, but good luck scaling this. This almost sounds the opposite. Like, this would be really easy to scale and manufacture.
Hopefully. It says they're going to hit the market in 2022, so.
Really? That long? Like just long stick some magnifying glasses on your solar panels. Come on.
Well, and it sounds like it's a special kind of solar panel. I don't have the numbers or names in front of me, but like if it's the kind that go up into space and it's more efficient and therefore they can like shrink the footprint of it, I don't know, that might require more rare minerals or whatever and it might cost a little bit more to make, but anyway.
Yeah,
that's
awesome. An interesting thing. Yeah, like, so it's crazy that it's that hard still. I feel like should be better at capturing solar energy by now.
Although it's improving a lot.
Sure,
but
sure.
Just kind of slowly.
But there is also, similar to that, Joe, I saw an article about the Chinese government is trying to put a solar power station in space. And part of the deal is kind of what you said, is that And we have a diagram of it here online. If you're just listening, we have it. We'll try to describe it. But when you have solar panels in space, you don't have things like clouds getting in your way. And it's a direct hit. The UV rays aren't affected at all by Earth's atmosphere. It's some insane amount. I forget exactly how much, but it was like 40 to 60% more efficient than what we have on here down on Earth. And China, what they're trying to do is then beam that down using a microwave or laser, and and then power a grid on Earth. And this isn't the first; these aren't the first people to do it. There's actually a project, I believe, out of Stanford that's looking to do something similar to this. But I kind of love this idea. You know, it makes a whole lot of sense. Like on Earth, we have so many factors. Like even, for example, in Puerto Rico, where you know they had that terrible hurricane that ripped through and destroyed, you know, the whole energy infrastructure there. And they're like, hey, why don't we just put solar panels up? Well, because 150 mile an hour wind will still rip a solar panel off the ground most of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you can have something like this, where the actual energy capture part of the system isn't subject to Earth's atmosphere or weather patterns or whatever, you know, possibly the receiving station still is. But I just thought this was a pretty neat idea. So,
well, plus it works at night.
Yeah, yes and no. Tim, you might have more of a sense of this, because in order for it to beam it down, it would have to be in what is it called, geostationary orbit, right? Yep. Where it's like constantly in the same position. And if that's true, then it will follow the day and night pattern, right?
It would only have a tiny window of eclipse, basically. So since it's 36,000 kilometers out, 22,000 miles, especially if you're on a high inclination, you can actually basically kind of like how the moon, you know, you'd think the moon, because it's orbiting the Earth, would like every day it'd go into an eclipse, right? Every day the sun or the Earth would eclipse, you know, the sun from the moon, right?
Yeah.
But it only happens like not that often, really, like, you know, once a year or something-ish or whatever it is. And that's just because of the inclination and it's so far off. This is similar but not quite as dramatic as that. But I actually don't know the answer of, like, how often you full-blown get an eclipse at geostationary orbit. But I would assume it's actually a pretty small window where you're full-blown eclipse at geostationary orbit.
And I guess you could be like far enough away, right? You could just be further, like, to where that would very rarely occur. So I guess you could potentially have it running 24/7. You know, there's probably someone's...
Or darn close, like, you know, pretty frequently, which is... That is a cool aspect of it. And also, like, the idea that, you know, you could use, like, lasers to penetrate through atmosphere better than UV can, because that's kind of the whole point. Is like, UV gets dispersed and, you know, scattered, all that stuff, and by the time it hits the surface, it's not nearly as potent as it is up in space. So you can convert that to a, you know, beam that's more potent, more direct, can go right through the atmosphere, no problem, then be received down on a ground station. The only thing, like, this is cool. I like this idea.
Yeah.
It just does have a lot of, like, there's a lot of other things that you really, like, a lot of technologies you have to perfect, like the transmitting, the receiving, like, is it going to be worth it in the long run? Like, solar panels are getting pretty stinking cheap. Now you have to launch a rocket, you know, with a thing big enough to make it worth it. Like, you're looking at a minimum of, you know, what, $50 million to even get this thing started What is $50 million worth of solar panels going to get you?
But actually, I think this actually plays, like, if they prove this technology works, it kind of actually plays very well into the hands of SpaceX, because their ability to launch things and reuse those things, like, they're going to be able to do it cheaper than anyone. So imagine they have their Starlink to provide worldwide internet with that whole concept. Imagine if they were able to do something similar here. I mean, I guess this requires still a ground station and all that, but it'd be pretty neat if it, you know, like, hey, now SpaceX can be an energy provider. Imagine that.
Of course.
See, here's what I would like to see is a Starlink-like constellation, like, swarming around the planet that, like, could direct, just the same way that they're directing energy down to the ground through microwaves or lasers or whatever, like, they could transmit that to each other, and bounce around to the different satellites till it hits a ground station where it's needed, and that way you could always have solar panel even at night, or solar panel, solar energy even at night, wherever you are.
Or if the receiving mechanism was sophisticated and advanced enough, it could power an electric car. And you're literally driving anywhere in the world, and your car is just always charged.
It's just beaming down and frying the person inside of it. There's just like a rotisserie human inside the driver's seat.
Details. We'll figure those out. We'll figure that stuff out. One problem at a time.
But my big hesitation, though, is just, is this actually going to be cheaper than having $100 million worth of solar panels? Like, and it will produce that amount of solar energy. Maybe not for now, but maybe technology will evolve and rocket launches will get cheaper, and eventually there is a threshold where it is totally valid and an awesome system.
And the efficiency gain is probably where you make a lot of that cost up, right? Obviously, it's more expensive to do this, but if you gain so much energy because of the things we just talked about, then maybe it's worth it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it could very well be a fun thing. So,
I mean, why don't they just do that?
Why don't they just, Tim?
Oh. Guys, speaking of why don't they just and solar, this is the best segue we'll ever have in our life, I think. We've gone to three different solar topics. This is from Tobias Rem, at Tobias Rem on Twitter. Why don't they just install solar panels at every supercharger? So basically, Ben, like you were just saying, why can't we just power, you know, the cars we drive off solar, essentially? You know, why do they have to be on our cars? Why couldn't they just be at the supercharging stations?
We do.
Well, hold on. let's let Joe go ahead with your why don't they just. Okay. All why don't they just, and then I think Mr. Smart Ben has the answer already. So what do you think, Joe?
Well, wasn't that their original plan, was to have all the superchargers be solar powered and be free energy and everything and integrated into the whole Tesla energy ecosystem? I'm assuming the reason why they're not is just land size, the amount of space needed to, I guess.
I think that's, I'm with, my genius thought. Let me add on to that, because I think yeah, like what you're saying, you know, a normal supercharger station that's in the back of an Arby's or whatever, like that, those eight stalls, just physically you don't have enough room, even if it's a canopy and stuff. That's probably not going to keep up with your demand, but that's still going to be better than nothing. Like, that's still, why don't they just do that? But I think the big part is they're just trying to scramble to get superchargers rolling everywhere and expanding that network. And eventually, of course, they could probably improve upon it and try to add more solar and all that stuff. But I'm thinking that for now, they just are, it's priority thing. That's my guess. So a mixture between land size, priority. Ben, what's...
All right, you guys ready?
Okay,
so it's a great question, so thank you for asking it. Back in June of 2017, and tell me if you guys are seeing my screen, Elon actually said this, that all Tesla supercharger locations will soon use solar power, and there are some diagrams and there's a lot of commentary on it. And so this was June of 2017. He said all superchargers are being converted to solar / battery power. Over time, almost all will disconnect from the electricity grid. And then later in November of 2017, I think this is the Kettleman City station.
Between LA and Las Vegas. Where is Kettleman
City? It's like Bakersfield area. It's kind of like east, like inland central California ish. I believe that's where this one is. And this is the one that has a cafe in it. If you guys search for that on YouTube, you'll see it. So they're doing this. They definitely are. The question about all of them having it is definitely a different, like more difficult kind of thing. So, in fact, I just yesterday spent a good day up at EV West here in San Diego, who do these really cool electric car conversions. And there was a guy from the company Quick Charge Power that make these cool adapters and stuff. I guess it's a plug for him, but bringing it up because he actually used to be a charge point like owner. He owned stations that charge point had. And I asked him about a unnamed company has an electric vehicle charger at the San Diego Zoo, and they have these big solar arrays there. and they're charging you like 60 cents per kilowatt hour. Well, I'm thinking like, you're getting this energy for free and you're charging me triple of what I pay at peak rates at home. This is highway robbery. This is – how are you doing this? And so he helped me understand a little bit more about this, that there are kind of two factors at play. One is for a Tesla supercharger, which has used DC energy and some insane amount of amps and watts and everything to actually charge your car super fast. Most businesses, most locations do not have the electrical infrastructure to support that, meaning that the power companies have to actually come and install a transformer to be able to support this. So there is a massive cost thing associated with that. Like the actual cables and stuff, they're expensive just because it's heavy gauge wiring and whatever. But a lot of it is the behind-the-scenes infrastructure of actually doing this. Then you have things like heat dissipation, which require these big tower things that actually – that's where the charging and all the actual transfer of energy is coming or is happening. And then it's just shooting it in with that cable. So those things take up space, right? So solar is great, but it clearly does not have nearly enough power to charge to handle the demand that a Tesla supercharger needs. So you can have them there, but it's not like it goes straight from there to there at, you know, 130 or 120 kilowatts. It's just not feasible. You'd have to have like football fields upon football fields of them to get that kind of energy. So you kind of have to go from the grid. Now, batteries are a good idea, and that's, as you saw, what Elon was saying. But again, the amount of batteries you have to say support 20 people pulling 120 kilowatts each, constantly throughout the day is, again, a football field or more of worth of commercial battery packs. So I think, you know, the question is in the right direction. And Elon, as we saw, has stated they are trying to do that. But the actual requirements, just physically enable to do that, mean that, you know, the amount of solar, the amount of batteries just in most locations, unfortunately, aren't possible.
So kind of like what Joe said, because it is about like land. I mean, you're not going to in a Arby's parking lot, you're not going to put in a football field sized solar
right
park.
Right.
Yeah. It's, yeah, but
it's crazy.
It definitely would be nice. You know, I know that they want to do that. And it does make sense for like a sunshade, too. Like they're so dual purpose in that sense that it totally does make sense.
Yeah. And so you can kind of do some stuff. I think the batteries because the batteries and then the chargers and the pieces that actually take the energy from the batteries and put it into the car, the, you know, bits between those two, those can definitely support this kind of a thing. Like they can support way more than the car can handle. Again, the amount of batteries you need are pretty big. And as we know, batteries are kind of the most expensive thing. So I think that's where they're going in certain places like that Kettleman City one, as you saw, that it'll definitely work. But, you know, it's just there's so much nuance there. You know, one of the things about superchargers, too, that I learned is that a lot of utilities will charge you as a consumer when you pull above a certain wattage or a certain like kilowatt rate. And so the cost of that electricity can like triple. Just because you're pulling it at a higher rate. So they're called demand charges. So a lot of these things, like there is so much kind of, I guess you could call it red tape to get through in order to install one of these that Tesla is definitely like losing out. Even by charging people to use it, they are still losing money on this whole thing, you know. So I'm sure they would love if they could just very easily install batteries and solar and boom, forget the grid. But unfortunately, the equipment and everything to do so just doesn't fit, and it's not as easy as it may seem.
Sweet.
Was that the most thorough "why don't they just answer" we've got?
I think so.
That may have been it.
We have no response to it. It's like, okay.
Well,
and
what he said.
And here's your sign.
If only we knew somebody that could ask Elon directly, and he would respond to.
Yeah. Why don't you just ask Elon, Tim?
Guys, I got tagged on Twitter or on Reddit. Look at this. Uh-oh. I found out last week. Actually, I found out before the show, so I probably should have mentioned it last week. But someone tagged me, finding out that Elon's replied to me more than anyone else on Twitter. Isn't that crazy? That blew me away. Like, what? I know. So yeah, apparently he's replied to me 22 times.
And this is what kind of time frame is this, right?
It might be 6 months.
Right. Right. Because it's not months. All time.
It's not all time, but I would be curious.
Is the one above you himself. Elon Musk himself?
Yeah, like it's, you know, in response to, like, someone asks him a question, he responds to that, and therefore it's, like, considered a self-reply. Or even just, like, topping, or maybe it's just replying to yourself directly, like, adding to a comment, which he seems to do quite often.
Hmm.
Isn't that crazy? That blew me away. I'm sorry. My head is exploding right now, I think, but that really did shock me that, like, apparently he thinks the questions I ask are worth a second of his time, which
why doesn't Tim just ask him to be on the show?
Someday. We'll get more clout, guys. We'll get there. By the way, we need to thank our listeners because we have had some very nice growth. Just nice and constant growth. I feel like people are telling their friends, I see comments like, I listen to this at work or blah blah blah. So just a quick shout out of love to our followers.
Thanks,
we've got
everyone.
Like,
where are
I think
we
we're like 12,000 already or something, right?
Yeah, 12,300 or so.
Dang, guys. Yeah. That's just on YouTube. This is also obviously an audio podcast. And
I think it's like 5,000 or so. It's really hard to measure podcast subscribers. Yeah. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of the way podcasts are kind of like websites were in the 90s. So seriously,
but
it's crazy.
That's a quick shout out to our friends and listeners and stuff. And hopefully we're making it worth your time. I've had a lot of fun doing this show, so I hope that's reflected. So,
absolutely agree.
But for another segue, because I saw there's a on this r/Elon Musk, I do see a Tesla, and it is a Roadster, and that makes me wonder. I would love to have a Roadster someday, or maybe some other Tesla someday in the next 5 years. But I've always wondered, what's the difference between leasing and buying? Like, what are the finances? You're a data guy, Ben. I want to know. Why, like, when is it appropriate to lease? When is it, like, does it make sense just to buy it and loan?
Yeah.
Tell me all about this, because I think they're now finally offering lease options on the Model 3 as well, right?
So, yes and no. There was a leaked email, and I even had some people send it to me from Tesla saying, hey, just got this, had no clue. Tesla is apparently offering or going to start offering Model 3 leases within a couple weeks, according to the document. Tesla did respond and say, yes, we're going to offer leases, but those dates aren't correct. So, yeah, we'll see. A couple weeks, maybe a month or something like that, the idea is to boost demand. That's why they would do it, because the basic concept is, if you buy a car, and it depreciates, as all cars do or vehicles do, you kind of bear the brunt of that. And if you lease a car, you're essentially just paying for the depreciation during the term of your lease. So if a car does not depreciate a ton, like a Honda or a BMW or certain Toyotas and things like that, or Teslas, then your monthly payment can be lower. Now, the downside is that you don't own that asset, right? But if you're going to upgrade that vehicle anyways, in three years is the typical lease, then you essentially are saving money on your monthly cash flow. So often it's cheaper to lease than it is to buy if the vehicle has a low amount of depreciation. And then the other reason why people often do it is for business, because it's a business vehicle and you're, again, not going to want like a 15-year-old business vehicle. So, you know, you're always going to be updating it. So those are kind of the main reasons why people would lease over buy. And, you know, I will see when they offer this exactly how it comes out, because even if you buy kind of a base Model 3 right now, I forget what it is. It's like at least $400 or $500 a month. Right, so it's not a very cheap vehicle. Obviously, your down payment varies there, but point being, if you could lease the car for, let's say, $350 a month, which is last time I looked on par with kind of like a BMW or something like that, then more people can afford that, right? And if you were to go to buy it, you know, most people can't really get there. I'm trying to pull up on the Tesla website what it comes down to.
I feel like leasing leasing a Tesla is always going to be pretty expensive though, right?
It'll still be expensive, but in theory it should be cheaper than having to buy it, than mm-hmm. the loan amount. So if you're going to keep the car forever, then buy, because you'll be in a better situation, right? Because eventually you won't have any payment. But if you know you're going to be upgrading it every couple years, 3 years, you know, I think you can do 5-year leases sometimes too. You know, we'll see kind of what terms they come out with, but typically that'd be cheaper. So, you know, right now, if you were to get a loan, assuming a 3.75% interest rate on 72 months, which is a pretty long term, with $5,000 down, you're still looking at $600 a month for your car payment. And so for a lot of people, that's still a really high car payment, right? What are you, did you guys, I mean, yours is probably in that ballpark, yeah?
I mean, we had to buy it, obviously. Like, we had to get a loan for ours.
Right.
And yeah, it's, I mean, it's over $1,000 a month.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you got the performance model, right? Yeah. And those kind of things. So yeah, definitely there's like it's a real, cost thing. It's not a cheap vehicle. And this was the thing. So you guys both get the federal tax credit, which you should be able to apply to your taxes. You apply them this year to last year's taxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just to clarify, I'm sure, I don't know if you've thought this, I'm sure you guys are smarter than that, but most people think that, like, you go to Tesla and they say, oh, cool, let's just take 10 grand off the top there.
Right.
It's like, nope, you still have to get a loan for that $60,000 car.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Like, net, in the end, yes, you get that money back, but your loan is still for that full amount.
Yeah.
So a lot of people didn't understand that. They got real mad at my little calculator I built. They're like, oh, how come you're not reducing the incentives? Like, well, because you don't. Right? You get the money back, but it still doesn't, unless you, like, refinance the car or something. But that's not that common. Yeah. So,
well, somewhat in fairness, Tesla on their website does tend to factor that in and make it look like it's going to be part of the cost of the car. And sometimes they factor in the cost of gas savings that you would.
Yeah, they go a little too far.
I get why they do that, but sometimes I'm kind of like,
you guys are stretching.
It's a little,
Yeah.
It really bothered me when Elon tweeted out that this new $42,000 model after gas savings would be $35,000. I was like, dude,
Yeah.
Somebody's going to jump on that and say, see, they're never going to release the 35 like they said. And,
Whoops.
It's just kind of like setting himself up to get kicked in the nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Or stepping on a rake. Now, about the whole the lease thing, I did read on CNBC that this indicates that nobody wants to buy their cars anymore. So,
well,
and they wouldn't lie about that kind of thing. They've never been biased against Tesla or anything. So,
I mean, Tesla's failing anyway.
Yeah.
Well, they also said that's why they're selling in Europe and China now, because nobody wants to buy them in the United States anymore.
You know,
obviously.
Yeah, obviously that's exaggerated, but I wouldn't be surprised if in Q1 we saw a bit of softening demand. Because basically the way it works, right, is they start with the most expensive models and then they work their way down. So it's not that there aren't still hundreds of thousands of people waiting. It's maybe just that the people that are still waiting, you know, can't afford or aren't interested in that more expensive one. My brother is a good example. He's like has a 20-year-old Honda Civic, still runs fine. He totally wants a Model 3. But he's just like, I just don't care about cars enough to want to spend $50,000. He's very.
That's most people.
Yeah. So most people, a $35,000 car is still a lot of money. You know, or I mean, I shouldn't even say that. Most people, it is. Like, it's just flat out.
Period.
Is. Yeah. So I could understand the a more nuanced version of that story being, demand is softening at the premium price point. Right. So if you can lower that price point, obviously more people will get it. I mean,
you open up a new market.
Yeah. So
new demand.
So I don't know. You know, it's an exaggerated kind of thing, but I don't know if there's not any truth to that headline.
Well, so I know they also took all the information about the 35 or the standard model down from the website. And
I think it's back
again. It depends on which direction you want to look at it. If it could either be that they're reconfiguring everything because they've got the standard model that's getting closer to coming out and they want to get everything kind of set up for that. The other would be that, oh, they're just giving up on the 35,000, which I don't think is true, but of course the naysayers are going to say that.
Yeah,
I thought it came back because people were so upset about it, but it looks like it's currently not listed.
See, I think that's pretty shiesty that right there it shows 34,850 when, like, that's just not the it's just not the truth, you know?
Yeah, there's some real big assumptions in that. You know, but I still go, if you really want a Tesla for that price, you can go to tesla.com/used and definitely, well, depending on where you're located, you may have to pay a delivery fee or whatever.
I don't know, after seeing Rich Rebuild's experience with a used Tesla.
Yeah, so first start a YouTube channel and get like 500,000 subscribers in the Tesla space, then go buy it and you'll get... but yeah, I mean, you're getting what you pay for, right? And so the Model S clearly...
He didn't even get what he paid for. He waited like 4 months for what he paid for, something ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty insane. But point being, in fact, I'm going to do a video on this because I'm going to do a refresh kind of to my 2013 Model S. You could buy one of these old Model S's, which, you know, objectively are more feature-rich than a Model 3. You can say you prefer the Model 3. I know people argue with me about this all the time. But point being, there's more to this car than the Model 3. So you could actually get more for your money. Take it to a shop and get, you know, paint correction, all kinds of stuff for $5,000-$6,000 to have that thing coming out looking like a brand new, beautiful Model S. And you're still cheaper than you can buy a Model 3 for right now. So I think if people really want to get into a Tesla and they don't want to wait or the Model 3 doesn't quite fit for them, I have a lot of people emailing me saying, I have a family. Does it work for this? Does it work for this? And it's so often I'm like, look, here you go. Look, $35,000, $36,000 for a Model S, you know, and put $5,000-$6,000 into kind of refreshing it. And that thing will feel like a brand new, amazing car, especially if it's your first Tesla. You know, if it's your first Tesla, you won't know the difference between a 2013 Model S and a 2019 Model S, right? You'll only know what you have in front of you. So that's my advice to a lot of people still on that.
Oh, have any of you guys got the Sentry mode yet? We talked about it a little bit last week, I think.
Not yet.
I have not. But the Cookie Monster apparently is on the lookout for Teslas with cookies in them. Did you guys see this full video?
What?
So don't leave cookies in your cars, guys.
That's right. Well, no, do once you get Sentry mode. So people have no clue what we're talking about. Sentry mode, there was an issue, I think we talked about last week, just quickly recap. There was an issue where the alarm on the Model 3 would only go off if the door or trunk was opened, meaning you could break out all the windows and the alarm would not go off. Now they've enabled all 8 cameras to basically be looking out for stuff all the time as long as Sentry mode is enabled. And there are different levels of activation. If you just approach the car, it will turn on. If you bump the car, it will go to like a second level. And if you break a window, it will go to a third level. Presumably, we haven't seen it yet. Maybe a future video. But apparently, you know, Tesla hired the Cookie Monster here. Man, I wonder if they had to license this from Sesame Street.
I was just wondering that. Just thinking that. Maybe it's just blue monster with eyes on top.
Because, you know, if we did this, we'd be copyright striked, you know, cease and desist. Oh, wow. I didn't know that he was banging on the car.
Yeah, he jumps up on the hood, probably dented it because he's
right,
so
okay,
fat from
so
all the
you
cookies.
Saw. Okay, so going back to Sentry mode here. You saw what happened. If you guys are, we'll describe it here. Cookie Monster is approaching the car. There's a plate of cookies inside of it. And he sees it, approaches the car. It automatically turns on to warning mode. Then as he starts banging on it, it goes into like full alarm mode where instead of showing HAL 9000, it just has a white screen. And I don't want a copyright strike, but it should be playing some kind of Beethoven classical music thing.
I like how you copyright strike for a 200-year-old song.
Oh, trust me, it's there.
It probably because it was performed by somebody and that's copywritten.
Yep. Which I mean, I kind of argue, how do you know? How do you know this isn't the 200-year-old copy that I got? if you did your job, a classical...
It was recorded on a piece of grass by a plate, and now we are listening
that's
to
right.
the MP3 of it.
That's right. How do you know?
Way before Edison.
We'll see what happens with Sentry.
What was the original phonograph that was like a cylinder that turned...
Yes.
I can't remember the name of it.
Did you see that someone broke one of those ones? Or is that a TV show that I saw?
Oh, no, yeah. Well, there's a video where the guy's like, this is the only one like it in the world, and it just, like, crumbles in his hand, and he's like,
Was that real? I need to look that up again. I feel like that was...
I feel like it was real, but I guess it could have been faked. It was hilarious.
Probably, yeah. It was either like The Onion or some kind of sketch. But yeah, it was like one of those like Vintage Roadshow things or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh my, he's like nerding out over it. It just crumbles in his hands.
Yeah. And he's got these like white gloves on and he just crushes it.
I now wonder if that's fake, but still funny concept nonetheless.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So that's, I'm really excited for Sentry Mode. I see they're talking about potentially improving it to, like, have things like, it'll activate upon GPS locations or, like, based on certain criteria, you can turn it on and stuff. Elon mentioned, like, yeah, we'll probably make it so it won't turn on at home, or you can have it auto turn on at this location. Say you park at work at a kind of place where you're a little nervous about it all day, it'll auto turn on every time you get to that.
Oh, right. Spot. Yeah, because you have to enable it. It's not always on.
Yeah. Right. And at least make it, like, easier, like, when you get out of the car, when you, like, put it in park to have it, you know, right there on the screen. Because I think you have to go into settings every time you want to turn it on right now.
Yeah, that's annoying. It won't work. It'd be cool if you – do we know if we can do it from the app? That would kind of be
– I don't think you can yet. But I definitely really want it so you can still stream from your phone like a Nest Cam. Like, so, I know that's dumb and I'll probably almost never use it, but just the idea of being able to, like, check on the car quick.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's cool.
One thing about it, too, that I'm not sure, someone sent me this question, if and when I ever get it, we'll test it out. So it's supposed to record to the local USB drive just like you have for the dash cam, right?
Mm-hmm.
And since all this information is super public and everyone knows this, if I break into your car, why don't I just take the USB stick with me? Does that not defeat the whole thing? Or is there, like, a secret USB stick you can, like pop open?
We talked about this on, like, putting one in the glove box and everything. But
yeah, like how are you going to prevent people from just stealing that footage?
Right. I'm guessing at some point it'll do cloud based recording, you know.
It should just have internal. It should just be internal storage. It doesn't have to be cloud, or it should be like, you know, upload on Wi-Fi kind of a thing, like, you know, Dropbox and photos and stuff like that. So, and that seems like a big flaw in the whole thing right now.
Speaking of that little USB drive, this is probably the last thing we should talk about on this topic. Do you guys have problems? Mine constantly is like unformatting. Like, I'll put it in, it'll work for a day or two, and then the icon's totally gone. It won't even have that X through it. It's just, like, gone.
Yeah. Do you ever take it out, or is it just...
Just, I plug it in and hope it just stays there for the security
forever.
Cam footage thing.
Yeah.
Dash cam. You guys have that problem, or does yours always show up?
Mine always works.
Maybe I just need to try a new USB drive.
How many gigs on it?
I don't know. A lot? Plenty? 32-ish?
I have 128 on mine.
But you'd think it should roll over. Like, it shouldn't...
I had a 32 gig one.
If mine works 2 days at 32, yours should only last 8 days at 128. You know what I mean? Like,
right. What I'm wondering is, as Joe hacks up a lung, what I'm wondering is it related? Like maybe you do need. So I had a 32 gig flash drive I put in there. Same problem. Just nightmare. Just kept failing. I don't know. It just didn't work. Now, 128 gig one, have had zero issues in, you know, the several months.
Can you send me the link to exactly which one? I'll just pick up that same one. I'd rather
I
have
will. You can find all of my recommendations at teslanomics.co/m3kit. How about that?
Oh, teslanomics.co/m3kit.
That's
I'm actually doing that right now.
Yep. So if you guys don't have this, you totally should. It's like just basically a basket of products you recommend for a thing.
Right.
Like, you know, if you want to, you know, shoot videos like MKBHD, you can, you know, go buy the $60,000 camera he uses, that kind of a thing. For me, you know, the Model 3 stuff is a perfect thing where it's like, I get this question all the time. What do you recommend for this? What do you recommend for that? So at teslanomics.co/M3kit, it'll
take you
over.
Too bad you don't have your USB of choice up on the, oh, there you go, down there, my gadgets. I'm seeing now.
Is it not in the M3 kit? Uh-oh.
Hang on.
I need to add it.
Scrolling down.
By the time you guys hear this, it will be there.
good. What are you guys working on this week, though? Your videos and stuff.
Coughing up a lung, apparently.
Yeah, you okay, Joe? You did a good job muting.
I had to check and make sure my volume was turned back up because I was turning it down and Monday, I have a video coming out about Bigelow Aerospace.
Ooh, I love them.
It's one of those topics that I was kind of like, I'd heard of them, whatever, and then I started looking into it, and I'm like, this could be really, really cool.
Yes.
And they're kind of on their way. I think next year they're supposed to put up the big B330.
next
which
year.
Which is a third the space of the whole International Space Station.
Yeah, in one vehicle.
In one launch.
Wow. Yeah.
Did you get into the topic of, you know, the owner's like a UFO conspiracy theorist and stuff? Robert Bigelow?
You know, I avoided it, yeah. And not for any particular reason. I just kind of wanted to focus on the stuff that they're doing.
Focus on the hardware.
And that seems a bit like a sideshow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like not adding value to the story.
Well, I don't know. I mean, a lot of people are interested in that, and I don't know. I just didn't find a place where it really fit, like, oh, by the way, let's stop talking about this and start talking about UFOs.
Right.
You know, it just it didn't really fit.
Yeah, where
anywhere,
do you throw it
so
in?
Kinda,
like, after the volume of the vehicle, when the timeline, by the way, the owner believes in UFOs, like,
are you like, apparently
but he's,
the owner,
he's like, I mean, it's not something he's ashamed of at all, like, he's super like outspoken about it, so
he is,
he's like, apparently he hasn't seen my last video on why that's not a thing.
Well, yeah, that was a while
back. That's awesome. I'm excited to see that, because people do ask me about Bigelow quite a bit, and I haven't caught an update on them personally for years. I know that they have the beam station, the Bigelow expandable activities module or whatever on station now. That's been there since probably 2016.
Even though they
or
don't
so.
Do any activities in it, it's just storage.
But, yeah. It's cool. It's a very impressive demonstrator. And they flew something before that even. I mean, they've been doing stuff for a while.
I mean, it's all going to be in the video. But like in 2006 and 7, they launched, they called it the Genesis program.
Yeah.
And it was just some uninhabited, and they had some fun with it. They had like a little bingo thing inside, and they let you like, for $300, you could put your stuff in space, and it just literally was like floating around, and they had webcams recording it.
That's really
but
cool.
But so those two, and they had some other prototypes that they were going to kind of keep going down that route, but then NASA was like, let's try this out. And it was NASA's original technology that they licensed.
Yeah.
And so NASA was like, okay, I guess it's looking like it's working. Let's put one on the space station.
Yeah.
So that's what the beam module is right now. It's kind of like a big experiment, but they're big. They call it the B-330. That's their, like, space station in a box that they want to start launching up there. And ULA, they've got a partnership with them to do it next year. So
that's – oh, because the
so
dream
they're
is,
actually they've had a really good track record considering.
Yeah, it's a little slower progress – just like all space stuff. It's all slower than I'd prefer. But they've been not – I mean, they've been doing it. They've been actually, like, doing stuff, which is – that's the biggest hurdle in space. Like – that first one or two things, most companies don't even get their first launch, you know, get their first thing in space. Nowadays, you know, for Bigelow, they've done stuff, big stuff, legit stuff. So, yeah, I'm excited.
It's pretty exciting.
That.
If they can make their stuff happen, it'll be a game changer.
Yes, that's awesome. That'll be good. Ben, what are you working on?
So we've got a couple things. So I just posted yesterday about how Tesla can kind of fix their biggest problem by hiring a chief operating officer. And then next week I'm talking about, or the next week's video is about electric trucks and kind of how that's going. You know, we just saw the thing from Rivian getting a bunch of money from Amazon. And so how that stacks up to whatever we currently know. It's funny. I'm sure as soon as we get done here, Elon will tweet 50 things about the truck that I'll have to go reshoot the video. But, you know, so that's the current plan, is that video, unless, you know, that all falls apart. And then really just kind of looking at how that stacks up against the Ford F-150, which is like far and away the most selling vehicle in the United States. Like,
it's crazy.
The next vehicle is like half of that. It's so insane.
That's
so
nuts.
You know, Tesla always comes out swinging, right? The, like, so I just have to imagine whatever specs they come out with are like, you're just going to look at it and go, oh, the F-150 is like a child's toy now.
Yeah.
But then again, you're probably going to have to pay $150,000 for it. So, you know, I'm not sure like how much of their lunch Tesla will
be
eating.
F-150s are pretty expensive, aren't they?
Not really. I mean, the cheapest one I think starts, when I looked at it, was like $29,000, like $30,000.
That's pretty expensive. Those are stripped down things, aren't they? $30,000. I mean, that's not like an entry level thing, and they get up to like 55, don't they?
70. You can you can deck them out to about 70.
Yeah.
But what is the cheapest Model S right now?
Yeah, 75. 80.
More than that, it's like 80 something. So this truck with the crazy specs Elon's talking about is not going to be a price competitor. It's going to be a
feature competitor.
Yeah, I've got a bigger one than you, competitor. It's going to be, I'm going to go to the construction site and make these other guys jealous kind of competitor. Yeah, it's
and
not going to be
all of the tools off this vehicle for the next week.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be a different animal. It's a different, you know, you can compete. What do they say in business school? You can compete on three things: price, speed, or quality. This is not a price, and this is not a speed. This is a quality, right? Like the value you get from it. So, yeah, so that's what it's about.
Yeah, having grown up in a small Texas town where a pickup truck was a status symbol, you know, like the kid in high school whose parents owned the insurance company was the one with the big dually quad cab pickup, and everybody thought was, you know, so cool because he had this gigantic pickup that, you know, you could put a hot tub in the back. And I don't know, like,
cool.
and so I took, you know, the Model 3 to my hometown for Christmas, and people were all oohing and aahing and stuff, but there was a lot of the kind of rudimentary questions you always get from people that just don't know anything about electric cars, and that's fine. Of course, do they have a pickup? I got to ask that a lot. Is there a pickup?
Right.
I'm like, well, eventually they're working on it, you know, but I'm just, I don't know, like, just the combination of just the way people feel about pickups and the whole not understanding electrics, and I'm just very curious how this is going to play out to that pickup crowd.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. So,
of course, I hope they take to it, and I know that there's a sizable percentage of them out there that are willing to spend a ton of money to have the coolest truck in town.
Right.
Would people think that an electric truck is the coolest truck in town, though? I don't know. And this is just this is from where I'm from. You know, so.
My opinion is, if it's such a gauntlet, like such a throwdown of like, we can tow three of your trucks with this truck, we can do this, blah, 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 we have this much torque, we have this, blah, 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 your truck is a joke. Like that type of, it has to be that, I think, in order just to totally, because trucks are often like a, you know, status, like a masculine thing. Like it has to compete on that.
They're compensators.
So the one, the one, like, okay, why I think we're going to see the Tesla pickup unveiled this year is because Tesla actually has to get this thing in people's hands soon, because Ford is working on an electric version of the F-150 as well.
And and Rivian with their pickup truck.
Right, but still, Rivian is not even, I mean, they don't actually, like they're still very far behind Tesla and Ford. Because both Tesla and Ford have factories making vehicles, right? So yes, Rivian, I think, has a great shot. I think they're what they made is amazing, and I really hope that they succeed. But I still put them way behind both of Tesla and Ford here. So Ford publicly stating that they are working on this. Spy shots being thrown out on the internet now. If Ford can beat Tesla to the punch with an electric version of F-150, I don't think Tesla has a chance. I think it'll be a complete flop. I think it'll be they won't sell nearly as many as they would, because Ford has in the truck space this brand legacy, just like Tesla has in the electric car space. Like, I couldn't imagine owning a non-Tesla electric car. I just can't imagine it right now, right? Because they have this legacy with me. So I think if Ford can beat Tesla to the punch or even be nearly as close, I think Tesla doesn't have a shot. You know.
And I don't think people want to change up their Calvin pissing on a logo stickers
to the T.
And if it's electric, does that shock Calvin? You know, we just have to work through these things.
Well, it's DC power, so you'd have to be touching the other side to it, right?
Okay. Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, so that's what the video is about. I hope it spurs some interesting discussion, and then, leading up to the unveiling of it, we'll see, you know. So hopefully that'll be kind of get things primed for that.
Speaking of making changes to videos, you know, you said, like, I'm about to make a change because he's going to tweet about it. I've been waiting. Okay, so I just finished, like, last night. I've been working on this video. This is one of those videos that has taken probably 80 hours just to shoot and edit. Like, forget all the scripting that was involved. I've been working, basically, since we last, I shot it before, the dialogue I shot before we recorded our last episode last Friday. Since then, I've been working on it day and night. Like, taking only tiny little bits to myself, because I've been animating. This is a 30-minute long rundown on, like, Crew Dragon versus Boeing Starliner, and then comparing those directly against the Soyuz capsule and the space shuttle. And, like, it was eye-opening, even to me, like, even someone that lives in this world, to actually see all these numbers laid out, see all the vehicles and their capabilities, see, like, the difference in the programs between Boeing and SpaceX. Like, it's I packed it full of visuals and good graphs and good animations, and like, it has been a killer. But the problem is, SpaceX is launching tonight, and I have a statistic in there that's the number of SpaceX Falcon 9 launches success rate. So I think I already shot it and then realized, well, crap. So I'm going to like just probably do a little overdub and fix the number, assuming that it goes well tonight. Mm-hmm. But what if off the off chance, because I don't want to release a video and have it be outdated in 3 hours or something, you know? So like, what of the off chance that it ends up like blowing up?
See, this is where you have to have general statements. They have launched many.
No, because I'm doing a direct, like, how many, like, the space shuttle, 133 out of 135, 98.5 success rate. The Soyuz FG is at the exact same success rate. Soyuz
95
overall is like
90 plus.
I like these hard numbers, though. You do have to make a like cutoff at some point and be like, to date, well, you know what I mean? But
as of recording.
Yeah, that's the magic phrase for me right there. At the time of this recording.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually kind of the beauty of YouTube, right, is because we have so much control over the whole process, like it sucks, it's a burden, but also at the same time, you can fix these things. Imagine if you're doing a show that airs 6 months from now, and it's like, oh, you know, well, this person from this country said this. You're like, oh, actually, those countries have a treaty now, your whole video's gone. Like, you know,
those countries renamed themselves, they're a totally different republic now.
Like, yeah, but it's like a show that has to be put out, you know? It's like, so
that is, I know that
it's a blessing and a curse.
I love that
we can
be flexible with it. Sweet. Well, I'm excited. I think we've I realized I will be literally on the road next week, as I mentioned. There's a chance we could maybe try like audio only for me. I'll just record. I'll actually have someone else in the car with me that could drive. I could sit there and just like put the lav mic on, and maybe I'll record from the road if it's not the worst sounding thing ever. I don't know. Maybe that's an awful, awful idea.
Considering our track record of audio issues, I'm just going to come out and say I'm not in love with this idea. why don't people leave us a comment? Hit us up on Twitter. Do you want to hear Tim literally on the road during recording next?
Blinker, turn signals, and honking.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe not. Maybe not. All right. Well,
before we say goodbye, I just wanted to. I'd never looked at this before, but when you were talking about let's thank our viewers or listeners earlier, I'd never really checked the reviews in iTunes.
Ooh.
So I pulled it up, and we have 70 ratings. 69 of those are 5-star reviews, guys.
Holy, really?
One of which is a 4-star review.
Did Mark Spiegel get in there? Is that it?
I can't tell. but so like...
That's amazing.
The Sleeve 180 says, this is the only podcast that I'm excited to come out every week. Recommend putting the podcast on all the 3 YouTube channels, but keep up the great work. Kento for Life says, just the best. Silver Magic 3 says, this is one of the few podcasts I listen to every week. Great information from great personality. So there's like some really great reviews in here. I'd never even looked in here before. So thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And of course, anybody that wants to put one in there, please do that. I'm looking at iTunes, but obviously there's Google and all the other places.
That is amazing.
That's a lot. That's way more than I thought.
Yeah, I mean, like somebody who's never heard of the podcast before might stumble across it and look at it and be like, hey, people actually like this.
Wow.
That matters. So thank you,
guys. I definitely
I
know when I'm looking for new podcasts, if it has 3 reviews, I'm like, this probably isn't the highest quality product.
Yeah.
So it does matter.
My Answers with Joe podcast looks like.
But it does definitely matter having a handful of reviews. So if you're still listening to this at this point, put your phone down quick or pick it up or whatever you're doing with it.
That is amazing, man. You know, and I was just looking at the stats here. It looks like 37% of our viewers are in Europe as well.
Whoa, that's awesome.
That is, well, okay, 12% of that is the UK. So do we count that as Europe?
For
a couple more weeks.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's funny. The guy that looks at data and numbers all day hasn't even looked at this.
That's awesome, guys. Well, we'll see you in that thing.
In our ludicrous future.
Futura.